Welcome to 2025 and our first early bird program of the new year on this Saturday morning, the 4th of January. On the first portion of our program this morning, a conversation I recorded a few weeks ago at the annual meeting of the Illinois Corn Growers. During the Corn Growers annual meeting, I had the opportunity to visit with several people, of course. One of these, Chris Reynolds. Mr. Reynolds is Midwest Director for the American Farmland Trust, and this year, he's the 2024 recipient of the Mike Plummer Environmental Award, named for the U of I's extension educator and no-till pioneer who passed away a few years ago. Chris, appreciate the opportunity to visit with you a little bit. We were talking off microphone about the tie-in with the American Farmland Trust and the Illinois Corn Growers.
Yeah, thanks. Over the past several years, you know, we've worked closely. American Farmland Trust, has worked closely with a lot of organizations here in Illinois. A lot of this really started in 2015 when the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy came out. And that strategy identified ways in which we could reduce nutrient loss from agricultural lands. And so since my time with American Farmland Trust, going back to 2017, I've worked closely with the Illinois Corn Growers. One of our first programs that we worked together on was the Illinois Fall Covers for Spring Savings Program, which is going to be entering its sixth year of the program through the Illinois Department of Ag. Really excited. There's 190,000 acres available this year. We started out 6 years ago with 50,000 acres available. So we've seen some growth. We still have a ways to go, I think, to meet the demand for the program.
Let me ask you this. Now, you folks farm in Montgomery County, and you have your hands on, your hands get dirty, so you're familiar with the ins and outs of agriculture. Many farmers still haven't bought into, can I say, the cover crop program. I just completed our Harvest Patrol reports, 12 different farmers in northeastern Illinois. Out of the 12, six maybe do a little bit, a couple of them a lot. Some, well, no, we're still thinking about it. So there's some work to be done.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen some growth in the adoption of new conservation practices, specifically cover crops. But certainly, you know, especially right now with the farm economy being where it's at, it's even more challenging to try to encourage farmers to take on something new. I think one of the biggest obstacles for a lot of farmers is just the additional management aspects of doing something like cover crops. So we certainly have a lot of work to do, you know, to show the economic, to show the benefits, the environmental benefits of these practices. There's just so many good things about them that it's, you know, I think we have to get them in front of more farmers and also just figure out a way for them to work for their system, you know, meet farmers where they're at. We know that not all farmers are going to want to do cover crops, and that's okay.
I mentioned earlier that you and your family farm in Montgomery County. Your home base is the Nokomis area. Let's talk about the different conservation practices that you folks utilize.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been doing conservation on the farm in some manner for a long time, but started out as a conventional farmer, you know, doing a lot of tillage in the fall and certainly, you know, tillage in the spring. You know, we had grass waterways, we had filter strips on the farm, CRP practices, you know, pollinator habitat. But in 2012, 2013, started to no-till soybeans and then started to use cover crops ahead of soybeans on the farm. Now most of those acres are getting cover crops in the fall if possible, and then no-tilling the soybeans and minimal tillage ahead of the corn. And it also has significantly reduced my nutrient management practices and went from all fall applied anhydrous ammonia to spring applied and split applied. So I'm applying half of it at planting, the other half via side dress.
Well, I appreciate you giving me that information, which I think will be of interest to our audience. And once again, I want to congratulate you on receiving the Environmental Award from the Illinois Corn Growers.
Thank you very much.
I also wanted to mention that Mr. Reynolds is a certified crop advisor with the American Society of Agronomy and holds a specialty certification as a 4R nutrient management specialist and sustainability specialist. Concerning cover crops, which Chris and I discussed quite a bit, that fall covers for spring savings program continues in effect according to the Illinois Department of Ag's website. You can still submit an application until the 15th of this month. Eligible applicants will receive a premium discount up to $5 per acre on the following year's crop insurance, depending on their crop insurance policy, for every cover crop acre enrolled and verified in the program. As I mentioned, applications are due at the Illinois Department of Ag by January 15th, so a week from this coming Thursday. And if you need assistance in filling out your application, contact your local Soil and Water Conservation District office. A large percentage of the information I present on our Farm Time and Early Bird programs each year pertains to crops, and a lot smaller percentage to livestock. As we continue now with the Early Bird this morning, some information on the pork industry from USDA's Gary Crawford.
Judging from the USDA's latest quarterly hogs and pigs report, it seems like hog producers are very carefully maintaining a good balance between production and demand. U.S. Department of Agriculture livestock analyst Michael McConnell says the numbers in USDA's report do show that producers are walking a bit of a tightrope, carefully matching production with demand for that production. On one hand,
the pig crop during September to November of 2024 was at 35.2 million head. That was 2% higher than a year ago. The key thing here, there was sows farrowed between September and November was at just under 3 million farrowings for the quarter, which is about level to a year ago. But the pigs per litter was 11.92 pigs per litter, which was 2% higher than a year ago. And that was a record high and substantially higher than where we were a year ago.
So the industry's having to try to balance increased production caused by more pigs per litter, balancing that with lower farrowings. First,
farrowing intentions for December through February coming up, as well as March through May of next year, are down slightly, about 1%. So, we're expecting to see slightly fewer farrowings compared to where we were last year. But again, with the pigs per litter rate as strong as it is, that might not necessarily translate into fewer market hogs. So we'll have to continue to pay attention to that.
The balancing act seems to be working pretty well, though. Producer margins, after a poor year in 2023, have grown considerably in 2024, not just because of a good management of supply and demand, but other factors as well.
First of all, relatively lower feed costs have helped producers as the price of corn and soybean meal has been relatively lower, and that's helped returns through much of 2024, That's likely going to continue into 2025. The other thing, too, is that demand has been fairly good, both in terms of export growth as well as strong prices and strong values feeding the domestic market as well.
USDA reports hog prices have been running 18% higher than this time a year ago, showing again that, according to Michael McConnell, that the hog industry's carefully, successfully walking that tightrope between producing too much pork and not enough.
Yeah, it's definitely a tightrope.
Definitely. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
As our new year begins, let's hope it's a very good year for all segments of agriculture. Well, that'll do it for the Early Bird this morning. Certainly glad you joined us. Hope you will again next Saturday. And as I always say, have a good weekend. I'm Mike Perrine.